And welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, November 13th, 2020. Here are some of your headlines. President Donald Trump makes his first public remarks in over a week, and since major news networks determined that the presidential election was won by his Democratic rival Joe Biden. President Trump giving an update on the development and distribution of an effective and safe coronavirus vaccine as cases, hospitalizations, and deaths rise dramatically across the country. President not taking any reporters' questions, not talking about the election. But in tweets, he continues to challenge the results, tweeting more accusations of widespread ballot fraud and claiming he is the rightful winner. On Capitol Hill, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reacting to that report from a federal cybersecurity agency concluding the November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. And today, NASA getting ready to make history over the weekend, launching a fully crewed spacecraft from a private company, SpaceX, to the International Space Station. And we start with the coronavirus. The U.S. set a new case record on Thursday, 153,000. There are 66,000 people across the country hospitalized. The death toll now over 242,000. But this week, there was some promising news on a possible vaccine, and President Trump talking about that in the White House Rose Garden.
We know that this virus primarily targets older populations and those with underlying health conditions. Well, over 99.98% of those under the age of 50 make a full and quick recovery. By giving the vaccine to high-risk individuals right away, we'll dramatically reduce hospitalizations and deaths. Case levels are high, but a lot of the case levels are high because of the fact that we have the best testing program anywhere in the world. We've developed the most and the best tests, and we test far more than any other country, so it shows, obviously, more cases. By vaccinating the elderly and the high risk, we will effectively end this phase of the pandemic and allow seniors to reclaim their golden years, the golden years of their lives, which is so incredible. And it's about time that they can have those golden years. Again, this process is starting right away. Millions of doses will soon be going out the door. They're all ready, waiting for that final approval. As soon as April, the vaccine will be available to the entire general population, with the exception of places like New York State, where, for political reasons, the governor decided to say, and, you know, I don't think it's good politically. I think it's very bad from a health standpoint. But he wants to take his time on the vaccine. He doesn't trust where the vaccine's coming from. These are coming from the greatest companies anywhere in the world, greatest labs in the world. But he doesn't trust the fact that it's this White House, this administration. So we won't be delivering it to New York until we have authorization to do so. And that pains me to say that.
President Trump in the White House Rose Garden. Washington Post reporting today more than 130 Secret Service officers who help protect the White House and the president when he travels have recently been ordered to isolate or quarantine because they tested positive for the coronavirus or had close contact with infected coworkers. That according to three people familiar with agency staffing. You can read more at WashingtonPost.com. With the rising cases across the country, the president again today saying he does not plan to move towards restricting economic activity.
While healthy Americans have gone back to work and to school, we continue to spare no expense to protect the elderly and the vulnerable. According to some estimates, a national lockdown costs $50 billion a day and hundreds of thousands of jobs every single day. Ideally, we won't go to a lockdown. I will not go. This administration will not be going to a lockdown. Hopefully, whatever happens in the future, who knows which administration it will be. I guess time will tell. But I can tell you this administration will not go to a lockdown. There won't be necessity. Lockdowns cost lives, and they cost a lot of problems. The cure cannot be, you got to remember, cannot be worse than the problem itself. And I've said it many times. And when you look at what happens during a lockdown, I just say it very loudly. It's horrible what happens with drugs, alcohol, depression, loss of jobs, business closures. It's a terrible thing. So this administration will not go, under any circumstances, will not go to a lockdown, but will be very vigilant, very careful. we understand the disease. It's a complicated disease, but we understand it very well. We ask all Americans to remain vigilant, especially as the weather gets colder and it becomes more difficult to go outside and to have outside gatherings.
President Donald Trump at the White House in the Rose Garden. What you just heard was the only reference he made to the election and his continuing challenging of those results, this event primarily on the coronavirus. As he left, though, reporters wanted to ask him questions about the election.
And thank you, everybody. Thank you very much.
President Trump not taking any questions today on the election or any other issue. We'll have more on the election coming up later in this program. Back to the coronavirus, Dr. Vivek Murthy, co-chair of President-elect Joe Biden's COVID Advisory Task Force, today rejecting the possibility of a national lockdown to contain the spread.
One of the other members of your advisory board, Dr. Michael Osterholm, floated the idea of a 4 to 6 week lockdown to get the spread of the virus under control. Is this the view of the incoming Biden administration? Should Americans anticipate more lockdowns?
Well, I don't think this is a lockdown or not locking down. I think that's how we thought about this in this spring. But I think we've learned a lot since then about how this virus spreads and what we can do to reduce risk. And right now, the way we should be thinking about this is more like a series of restrictions that we dial up or down depending on how bad spread is taking place in a specific region. In New York City, for example, what you're seeing is them target their interventions down to the zip code. So we're not in a place where we're saying, shut the whole country down. We got to be more targeted. If we don't do that, what you're going to find is that people will become even more fatigued. Schools won't be open to children, and the economy will be hit harder. So we've got to follow science, but we've got to also be more precise than we were in the spring.
Dr. Vivek Murthy is an advisor to President-elect Joe Biden, Friday morning on ABC's Good Morning America. But more governors are moving to impose additional COVID restrictions. In New York, Andrew Cuomo announcing curfews on restaurants and gyms and limited gatherings in private homes to 10 people. It goes into effect today. Governor Cuomo held a teleconference.
The COVID numbers internationally are rising. COVID numbers nationally are rising. The COVID numbers on our surrounding states are rising. You cannot defy reality, and reality is the virus transmits, and the virus is mobile, and we're in the holiday season, and people will travel more, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, holidays. Winter, more people inside. These are all elements that conspire to increase COVID. That is the fact. The numbers are going up. The numbers will go up. I take that as a fact. There is a vaccine on the horizon, but it is a further horizon than most people think. If it takes 6 months, 9 months to distribute a vaccine, I think we're talking about that range. You cannot sustain a rising COVID rate until you have a vaccine. If that is an operating assumption, that is wrong. To the extent people say, well, you know, vaccine is right around the corner, so we can start to relax because the vaccine is here. The vaccine is not here. The vaccine is on the horizon, and you cannot take this rate of increase and survive pending the arrival of a vaccine. you have this level of infection rate, it's even going to make the vaccine distribution harder, right? Vaccine distribution, you have to bring people together. They have to be on lines. They have to be in waiting rooms. So this is all going to complicate it.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, on the phone today with reporters. He plans an emergency weekend summit with other Northeast governors to discuss next steps and try to align strategies against the coronavirus. And New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio saying today he could make all city school instruction remote as early as Monday. On Wall Street today, the Dow was up 399, NASDAQ up 119, S&P up 48. This is Washington Today. And now to President Trump's continuing contest of the presidential election results. The president tweeting today, for years the Dems have been preaching how unsafe and rigged our elections have been. Now they are saying what a wonderful job the Trump administration did in making 2020 the most secure elections ever. Actually, this is true, except for what the Democrats did, rigged election. And he was referring to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency report, which includes these lines. While we know there are many unfounded claims and opportunities for misinformation about the process of our elections, we can assure you we have the utmost confidence in the security and integrity of our elections, and you should too. White House Trade Advisor Peter Navarro was on Fox Business today saying the Trump administration is operating as if it will extend into a second term.
Maria, we're moving forward here at the White House under the assumption that there will be a second Trump term. I think it's really important before people's heads explode here to understand that what we seek here is verifiable ballots, certifiable ballots, and an investigation into what are growing numbers of allegations of fraud under signed affidavits by witnesses. And my own view, looking at this election, we have what appears in some sense to be an immaculate deception. But if you look statistically at what happened, clearly the president won this election and was leading on election day. And then after election day, somehow in these key battleground states, they got just enough votes to catch up to the president. That's kind of what is being investigated. So I think what's important here is that this is a country of laws and rules. We have a very clear set of election laws. And what we need to do is go through the process as we did with Gore, Bush v. Gore, and see where we get. So until we do that, our assumption is the second Trump term. We think he won that election. And any speculation about what Joe Biden might do, I think, is moot at this point.
White House Trade Advisor Peter Navarro today on Fox Business. He was responding to a question about whether a Joe Biden administration would reverse a particular executive order issued by President Trump. And the Associated Press today calling North Carolina for Donald Trump, winning by about 70,000 votes or 1.3%. According to AP, Joe Biden has 290 electoral votes. Donald Trump has 232. That leaves only Georgia's 16 votes. That state in the middle of a hand recount, the initial count showing Joe Biden ahead by about 14,000 votes. Journalist Geraldo Rivera tweeted today, just had a heartfelt phone call with friend Donald Trump, who said he's a realist who do the right thing, but he wants to see what states do in terms of certification, etc. He sounded committed to fighting for every vote, and if he loses, talking more about all he's accomplished. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Capitol Hill saying not recognizing the election result in favor of Joe Biden is hurting the country.
The election is over. Joe Biden is the president-elect, elected with a mandate of over 78 million votes. But don't take it from me. The Elections Infrastructure Government Coordinating Council and the Election Infrastructure Sector Coordinating Executive Committees said in their joint statement, this November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. There is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. It went on to say, While we know there are many unfounded claims and opportunities for misinformation and the process of our elections, we can assure you that we have the utmost confidence in the security and integrity of our elections, and you should too. The Republicans, shamefully pretending otherwise, are doing serious damage to our American democracy here and as is viewed throughout the world, and making it even harder to address the massive health and economic crises facing America right now. The longer the Republicans keep up the charade, the further out of control the COVID crisis will spiral and more in danger Americans will be. I urge our Republicans to accept the facts, acknowledge the crisis, and immediately come to the table to work on COVID relief.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi at her weekly news conference on Capitol Hill. Another line from that CISA report concluding there's no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. But President Trump tweeting today, the election was rigged from Dominion all the way up and down. He's referring to Dominion Voting Systems, a software company used in a couple of dozen states. The president claims without evidence, millions of votes intended for him were deleted or switched through that software. Also, a new interview with President Trump published today by Byron York of the Washington Examiner. The president again not acknowledging he has been beaten by President-elect Joe Biden, insisting his campaign's election-related legal challenges would reverse the outcome, and saying Americans should, quote, never bet against me. President-elect Joe Biden has named members of his agency review team, the people to go into federal agencies, in bed with them, and help prepare for the incoming administration to smoothly take over on Inauguration Day. But the Trump administration is not allowing that process to start. David Marchik, director of the Center for Presidential Transition, explains that the head of the General Services Administration has not ascertained that Joe Biden has won.
So, Bill, you struggled with the word ascertainment because it's not supposed to be a word that is commonly known, because the issue of ascertaining the winner of the election has never been controversial, never been politicized. There is a provision in the 1963 Presidential Transition Act, which gives the GSA administrator the responsibility of ascertaining the outcome of the election. There are many other government agencies that have similar responsibilities to act when there's a new president-elect. The Secret Service on Saturday morning significantly expanded their protection around President-elect Biden because he was going to be President-elect Biden. And so that was not a politicized decision. The Secret Service just did that. So unfortunately, even the most non-controversial ministerial acts in this world, in this town, are being politicized today, and this is one of them. The subject, the criteria is basically if the outcome is clear. And the outcome is clear. All the networks have called the election, as you said in your piece from last Sunday, four states would have to be turned over. The likelihood of a recount changing the outcome is almost zero. Even President Bush stated in his own statement that the outcome is clear. And so we'll get into this, but the GSA should make this ascertainment. And then the Biden team should be able to get access to all the support, which we can talk about some more.
That's David Marchik, who leads the Center for Presidential Transition, part of a discussion today hosted by the University of Virginia's Miller Center of Public Affairs. Also on that panel, two former Homeland Security secretaries talking about how the lack of a formal presidential transition so far could affect national security. Here is Michael Chertoff, followed by Janet Napolitano.
I think there are two things that are creating risk from a security standpoint. First of all, having a transition that begins right away, getting clearances to the incoming team, giving the president access to the president-elect access to current intelligence. These are all part of the process of preparing so that when the new administration comes in, they can hit the ground running and not have to then figure out what the threats are and what the capabilities to respond are. And we can talk a little bit later about how we handled that when we did the handoff from the Bush administration to the Obama administration, because that was very much in the front of our minds. And we worked very cooperatively across both the outgoing and the incoming folks to make sure that we immediately fully briefed the people coming in with President Obama. They had access to intelligence information. We even ran an exercise about a potential pandemic so they could really get a feel for how things would work in the levers of government. But putting to one side the transition, there's another compounding problem. We are seeing a purge of security personnel. We've seen the Department of Defense decapitated. There's rumor about DHS having people fired or being forced to resign. And that exacerbates the problem because it means in this window of time, when our foreign and domestic adversaries perceive weakness and opportunity, we are signaling that we are dropping our guard. And that is a very risky thing to do, and it holds the American people hostage.
Secretary Napolitano?
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I was going to emphasize first the need to have a smooth handoff from a national security perspective, and not to have any kind of a gap. We are fortunate that the president-elect has so much experience that even with this delay, he'll be able to catch up quickly. But nonetheless, this is an unnecessary risk that President Trump is putting on the country. And secondly, Michael's comment about the removal of Department of Defense personnel and their replacement by political loyalists of President Trump, two key personnel at the Department of Homeland Security, quote, resigned, close quote, yesterday, according to the Washington Post. You know, these are troublesome moves from key departments necessary to protect the security of the American people. So if you were to ask me what is the greatest risk factor confronting the United States today, I would say the greatest risk factor is actually President Trump.
Janet Napolitano was Homeland Security Secretary for President Obama. Michael Chertoff held that position in the George W. Bush administration, part of a discussion hosted by UVA's Miller Center of Public Affairs today. Runoff election campaigns for the two U.S. Senate seats from Georgia starting to heat up. One contest is incumbent Republican Senator David Perdue against Democratic challenger John Ossoff. Here are some ads from both of those campaigns.
Now we take Georgia, then we change America.
You heard him. Chuck Schumer is trying to use Georgia to take the Senate majority and radically change America. The Schumer, Pelosi, Ossoff change? Defund police. Voting rights for illegal immigrants. Washington, D.C. as the 51st state.
Then we change America.
Change is coming to America.
Believe them. Vote Perdue to stop them.
I'm David Perdue, and I approve this message.
I'm John Ossoff, and the path to recovery is clear. First, we listen to medical experts to control this virus. Then we shore up our economy with stronger support for small businesses and tax relief for working families. And it's time for a historic infrastructure plan to get people back to work and invest in our future. We need leaders who bring us together to get this done. And that's why I approve this message.
The other U.S. Senate seat runoff in Georgia also has an incumbent Republican Senator, Kelly Loeffler, facing Democrat Raphael Warnock. Loeffler has put out a new ad.
This is America. But will it still be? If the radical left controls the Senate, Raphael Warnock called police thugs and gangsters, hosted a rally for communist dictator Fidel Castro, and praised Marxism in speeches and writings. Raphael Warnock will give the radicals total control. Saving the Senate is about saving America from that.
I'm Kelly Loeffler. I approve this message.
And today, Raphael Warnock was on CNN asked to respond to that ad.
I cannot allow myself to be distracted by Kelly Loeffler. I'm the pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church, the spiritual home of Martin Luther King Jr. I have spent my whole career and ministry pushing hard against racism and bigotry and xenophobia in all of its forms. And I have built multiracial, multi-faith coalitions to solve some of our biggest problems. Kelly Loeffler, on the other hand, welcomes the support of bigots. She sat down with a known white supremacist for an interview. She has welcomed the endorsement of a candidate who traffics in the QAnon conspiracy theory with all of its racist overtones. I've spent my life trying to pull people together. And in a moment like this, in which we're dealing with this once in a century pandemic that has created an economic turndown that is devastating Georgia families, I'm focused on those families.
Raphael Warnock, Democratic U.S. Senate candidate, today on CNN. He and opponent Kelly Loeffler came out of last week's election with the most votes in the field, but neither got over 50%. Same thing happened in the other race, David Perdue and John Ossoff. That led to the runoff elections. They're going to be on January 5th. If Republicans win just one of these races, Republicans will control the U.S. Senate and the next Congress. Democrats need to win both, with President Biden in the White House and Vice President Kamala Harris breaking the tie. Democrats will control the majority in the Senate. Also today in Arizona, Republican Senator Martha McSally conceding her race to Democratic challenger Mark Kelly more than a week after Election Day. She lost by a little over 2 percentage points. This is Washington Today. Another first for NASA this weekend. 4 astronauts, a full crew, will blast off aboard a SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule atop a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket on a trip to the International Space Station. NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine explained the goal of the mission at a news conference at Kennedy Space Center in Florida.
The whole goal here is to commercialize our activities in low Earth orbit. NASA wants to be one customer of many customers in a very robust commercial marketplace for human spaceflight in low Earth orbit. But we don't just want to be one of many customers, we also want to have numerous providers that are competing against each other on cost, on innovation, and on safety, ultimately bringing more access to space than ever before. We, of course, have had success with commercial resupply of the International Space Station, where we're buying services to get our equipment and hardware and experiments to the ISS. Now we are having success with commercial crew. And of course, tomorrow's flight is the next major milestone in this development. And of course, the next big phase is commercial space stations themselves, where we have private capital and NASA as a customer as well, ultimately capitalizing, funding, and moving forward for this new era in human spaceflight, where again, NASA is just one of many customers and numerous providers are competing on cost and innovation.
NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine Friday morning. He later tweeted that due to high winds, the launch has been postponed from Saturday to Sunday. Back in May, when 2 astronauts went into orbit aboard the private spacecraft, that was considered a demonstration mission. It was not until this week that NASA certified Crew Dragon as a human-rated spacecraft. And as Bridenstine mentioned, it's hoped that this will be the start of a large space tourism industry. The mission today, or the mission this weekend, also certified by the Federal Aviation Administration, and Administrator Stephen Dixon was at the news conference.
In calendar year 2020, the FAA has licensed 31 space operations thus far. In fact, we set a record in the month of October with 6 in 1 month. And we expect to license 56 more space operations, so just about one a week in 2021. So really an exciting time in aerospace in the United States. In and of themselves, these numbers are very impressive. But they really are just the tip of the iceberg about what's to come. Once space tourism turns the corner, we think we'll see likely topping 100 operations a year. So we are prepared for that. These operations are going to be a huge part of the new space economy, which some estimates say could be worth $1 trillion by the year 2040.
FAA Administrator Stephen Dixon. So now, launch scheduled for Sunday. C-SPAN Television will be covering it live beginning at 3:15 p.m. Eastern, and liftoff scheduled for Sunday at 7:27 p.m. Eastern. Thanks for joining us today. Download the free C-SPAN Radio app to listen to C-SPAN Radio anywhere and get this program and other C-SPAN programs as podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Have a good night and weekend.